It's April 19th. I'm Brian Dean Wright, former CIA operations officer, and this is The Wright Report. Hey, good day to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Wright Report, your daily news podcast. It's Friday's headline brief, heavy on news, light on analysis, launching us into the weekend with events, as always, that are shaping America and the world. But before we begin with our scheduled briefs, folks, breaking news out of the Middle East for us this morning. We are getting reports of explosions in Syria, Iraq, and Iran. That is confirmed by both Israeli and U.S. press outlets, plus some civilian reports in Iran as well. This could be the beginning of Israel's expected response from being bombed last weekend by Iran. I will be watching for this later today and over the weekend, sorting through both the facts and the misinformation, waiting for the smoke to clear. More to come on this on Monday. Meanwhile, we begin this morning's scheduled briefs with domestic news, starting in New York City. The jury selection for the Donald Trump trial wrapped up yesterday, but only after a pretty challenging afternoon. Two jurors who had already been seated were removed or otherwise excused. One was a woman who was concerned that her identity had been leaked to the press. She said her friends and family were texting her, and thus her safety had been endangered. The second was a man who had apparently lied or been less than transparent about his history of criminality or that of a family member. But with those two out, the judge moved pretty quickly yesterday to replace and fill the jury, which now sits at 12. The hunt is on for six alternates. There appear to be two this morning, with another four or so that should be chosen by later today. The judge, as ever, hopes to begin this trial on Monday, although that judge, Mr. Juan Merchan, is under continued scrutiny of his own this morning for his biases. CNN and others report that he has given small amounts of campaign cash to Democrats and Joe Biden over the years. But nevertheless, this judge refuses to recuse himself from the case. Mr. Trump finds that to be outrageous. He is blasting this judge in the trial and the jury selection on social media. And prosecutors say that by doing so, Mr. Trump is violating a gag order. The judge heard that argument yesterday and said he'd think about it and rule next week. With those quick facts and data, let me offer you my analysis and opinion based on a study from the Media Research Center. So here's what we know. When ABC, NBC, and CBS News speak about Trump-related prosecutions, in at least 90% of the cases, they fail to identify the fact that the prosecutors are Democrats. And in most cases, these Democrats actually ran for their office with the promise of prosecuting Mr. Trump. In other words, America's media outlets are presenting these cases as though it's just about Trump and his alleged crimes, rather than the possibility that we've got some serious partisan bias amongst those prosecutors. And in my view, that is not an accident. That is the goal. That is how regimes operate. That is how propaganda works. You control and you cheat through things like omission. And sadly, I think that we should expect to see more of that to come. Next up. And speaking of electoral cheating, it's not just the media in this country that is looking to cheat in this political system of ours. It's also your fellow Americans, too. The Heartland Institute recently conducted a survey of 1,400 Americans, asking them if they would be willing to cheat to get their preferred candidate, whether that be a Republican or a Democrat, ultimately to the finish line of electoral victory. Now, the cheating could include things like voting in multiple states, destroying or altering mail-in ballots, paying a friend or an associate to vote, or giving false information to somebody about when or where to vote. The pollster found that 28% of us would do one or more of those things. Men, we were slightly more likely to do that than the gals. Older Americans, though, bless your hearts, y'all were the least likely of everybody to engage in any shenanigans, thank you. The most likely of everybody, though, to cheat were younger Americans age 18 to 39. And if you take that data and you extrapolate it across the country, that means that 45 million voters and ballots could be changed if folks could get away with it. And maybe some are. And that was the point of this survey. It helps us frame out the potential for fraud and abuse in our electoral system. And it underlines the importance of electoral security, whether that be in-person voting or voter ID. No analysis or opinion on this one, folks. It's just a reminder, isn't it, that humans are sneaky. That's why we have rules, or we should, especially at the ballot box. More to come. Next, an update on illegal aliens in this country, and we start in New York. The New York Police Department is dealing with a new set of crimes this morning. Illegal aliens are stealing goods throughout the city and then selling them on sidewalks in a flea market-like setup. Police have been conducting raids and confiscating goods, mostly in the borough of Queens. But within hours of those raids, illegal aliens are moving right back onto the streets with more stolen goods, suggesting that gangs or criminal rings are certainly involved, and they are definitely well-organized, and they are dedicated to their profitable cause. With those quick facts and data, let me offer you my quick analysis and opinion. Well, step back for a second, shall we? We've got over 8 million illegals who have come into this country over the past 3 years. Most of them have no skills, no English abilities. They rely on local and state governments for aid. They've got a whole bunch of time on their hands. And in the case of Democrat or blue cities and states, the district attorneys there will not charge these folks with petty crimes like theft. So goodness gracious, you put that together, whoo boy, you got yourself a nightmare. And that is why I shouldn't laugh, A. B, I sure wish the folks in New York City and other Democrat cities good luck, because you're going to need it. And speaking of Democrat or blue cities and illegal migrants or aliens, let's check in this morning with Denver and Chicago. Those are the two other cities beyond New York that have taken in more illegal aliens than all others in this country. We begin in Denver, where the city council there voted on Wednesday to cut $41 million from the budget to pay for the care of illegal aliens. The biggest cuts will come from the fire and police departments, with the cops losing $8.4 million. The sheriff's office will see a loss of $3.8 million themselves. And then the fire department, they're bracing for a loss of about $2.5 million, give or take. Denver's far-left mayor, Mike Johnston, said about this, quote, "After more than a year of facing this crisis together, Denver finally has a sustainable plan for treating our newcomers with dignity," end quote. By the way, this $40 million plan of his is on top of the $44 million that he has already spent on illegal aliens previously. And next, we go to the city of Chicago this morning and the surrounding Cook County, because they are making cuts too to their basic services, all to tend to illegals. The city is set to vote today on using $70 million in reserves for illegal alien care. With Cook County yesterday, they approved a separate $70 million for the exact same thing. So the use of these tens of millions of dollars for illegal aliens is riling up the native Chicagoans, especially Black and Hispanic folks. They say that they, the locals there, they need the help, whether that be rent assistance or food or what have you. They argue that prioritizing the illegal aliens is just wrong. Well, be that as it may, the city and the county are aggressively moving forward with their plans, and they're doing so in part because they're trying to settle any concerns about illegals well before either Mr. Biden or his Democrat Party descend into Chicago later this summer. They've got their nominating convention in July, if memory serves. Next, and before we take our first break, we've got one more piece of news to talk about regarding migrants. This one involves a Marxist. She is from Somalia, and her name is Representative Ilhan Omar. We're going to talk about her and her daughter especially, because that young lady and many others were arrested yesterday while on the campus grounds of Columbia University in New York City. They were protesting the war in Gaza. She and the others refused to leave the campus after being there for a number of days. They were then tossed off campus grounds. Ms. Omar's daughter, I should tell you, did not actually go to school at Columbia. She attended the nearby Barnard College. And when they got wind of this, they suspended this young lady from school. Now, it is unclear how long the suspension will last, or maybe she will be expelled. We're waiting to hear some remarks or a response from Ms. Ilhan Omar. No word yet, but I'll keep you posted. And with that, let's take our first break of the morning. For subscribers listening at rightreport.substack.com, thank you. Meanwhile, for my other loyal listeners, I offer you an equal thanks. You are about to hear from the good folks at Factor Meals in just a second. And depending on your platform, you might hear from either Arc Seed Kits, which is great. Springtime, got to get the seeds. Or you might hear from the good folks of Wacker Coffee Company. I wake up to them every day. Love them. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. Are you eating your FactorMeals.com breakfast? Well, for Pete's sake, why not? Factor is the best meal delivery company in America, especially for busy or retired people. So here's why I think so. First, it's just the taste. The food is delivered fresh to your door, never frozen, and when you taste it, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. These meals just burst with flavor, and not just for breakfast. They've got lunches, dinners too, plus cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. And that is the second reason for why I love Factor meals. They've got variety. Woo! More than 35 different meal options to choose from. So folks, get Factor meals today at 50% off. Go to factormeals.com/right50, that's W-R-I-G-H-T 50, and get 50% off. Again, that is promo code right50 at factormeals.com/right50 and get your 50% off. And as you do, remember that you are getting a meal service that is good for your body, great for your taste buds, and I promise you are going to love it.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to The Right Report. Let's continue with our briefs this morning with more domestic news. We have a new assessment, ladies and gentlemen, about the cost of Joe Biden's student debt forgiveness plan, otherwise known as a debt swap. Weeks ago, Mr. Biden said it would cost American taxpayers about $150 billion. That debt would be added to the federal government's debt after they took it from the students. But as it turns out, Mr. Biden's estimate was low. Instead of costing just $150 billion, it could be upwards of $750 billion, all depending on how the Secretary of Education determines eligibility. This assessment, by the way, comes to us from the nonpartisan group called Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. It is the second assessment we've gotten recently. Another one was from the nonpartisan Penn Wharton School of Business, which estimated that Biden's program would cost about $560 billion. Again, that too is far higher than Mr. Biden's initial claim of only $150 billion. For what it's worth, the U.S. national debt this morning sits at $34.66 trillion, which means that every taxpayer in this country now owes $267,000. And of course, that is only set to go higher. More to come. Next up, two important pieces of news from the White House this morning to talk about. First, Mr. Biden and his team are weighing whether or not he should declare a national climate emergency before this fall's elections. Bloomberg News reports that the talks to do this, which were postponed from about a year ago, are now back on. The hope is that Mr. Biden might do this before November to motivate his base of supporters. As for what exactly this would mean, Mr. Biden's staff are talking about a few things, including halting or limiting the crude oil exports from this country for at least a year. Next, suspending offshore drilling. And third, this is interesting, slowing the movement of oil and gas via pipelines, ships, or trains throughout America. For the record, neither Mr. Biden nor his campaign have responded to requests for comment about this, nor has the White House's spokeswoman, Karine Jean-Pierre. I'll keep you posted. Next up, and on a related piece of news, the White House issued new rules yesterday about how Americans will be able to use leased federal land, with some big impacts on farmers, ranchers, and miners. The Biden administration's Interior Secretary announced yesterday that she will start or expand efforts to lease federal ground to conservation groups, much in the same way that the federal government does right now for miners, loggers, or ranchers who graze their cattle and sheep. The hope by the Biden White House is that doing this will take at least 10% of federal lands out of public use, all to, quote, help bolster landscape resilience in the face of worsening climate impacts, end quote. As you would probably guess, progressives are praising Mr. Biden's ruling. Conservatives and Republican governors, though, are not, especially out west. They are promising to sue. So, ladies and gentlemen, more to come on both of those pieces of news regarding that climate emergency declaration and these new leasing rules. But let me just offer you a quick piece of analysis and opinion. So we can reasonably believe or assume that environmental groups will use this new land rule about leasing and possibly this climate declaration to take land out of use by farmers, ranchers, and ultimately working class Americans. So, for instance, ranchers would probably be outbid or shut out of the bidding process because ultimately the federal government will say that their cows emit too much methane. And golly, that is how you take greater control of rural America. You break the backs of the farmers and ranchers. And that is also how you take control of the nation's food supply. So that is why I'm going to be watching for news on these very curious developments. And I'm going to keep you posted because, gosh, it sure is important. Next, we've got two pieces of national security news to discuss coming to us from Washington, D.C. about how to handle the Chinese government. First, after some intense lobbying by the U.S. government and U.S. corporate interests, Mexican officials have agreed to halt some incentives to Chinese car companies. And that is important, as listeners might recall from my brief to you back on March 18th. Beijing's communist-backed companies have been trying to move into Mexico to take advantage of the trade deal between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico called the USMCA. And the Chinese are pretty simple as they are devious in terms of their strategy. What they do is they dump their goods in Mexico or assemble them there, and then they sell those goods tariff-free as though they are made in Mexico to consumers in the U.S. and Canada. Well, U.S. car companies in particular have been just in absolute panic about this. They have serious fears about some cheap Chinese cars flooding into the North American market. Canadian auto supply manufacturers were pretty anxious about this too. In fact, they, along with the U.S. government, have been pressing the leftist president of Mexico, a guy named Mr. López Obrador, to stop doing this incentive stuff for the Chinese. And it worked, sort of. Mr. López Obrador agreed to stop offering the Chinese any tax incentives or cheap or otherwise free land. But, as Reuters News reports, these Chinese companies are now speaking to state officials throughout Mexico instead of the federal Mexican government. And that is probably at the president's direction. It gives Mr. López Obrador a talking point that, hey, he tried to do something about this cheating Chinese stuff, but then the states got involved and went in a different direction. Well, as ever, I will keep you posted on this, although I do want to leave you with this, quite important. The USMCA, it expires in July of 2026. So that means that the next president has a chance to fix this issue and renegotiate this treaty, and ultimately, if they want to block China out of Canada and Mexico and the United States. In other words, we've got leverage. Let's hope that we have a president in the next couple of years who wants to use it. More to come. Next, we have more national security news to talk about regarding China, and this one is related to TikTok. House Republicans are attaching legislation to force the sale of that Chinese app TikTok. They're taking that legislation and they are putting it on the funding for Ukraine and Israel. So the idea is that this will then quickly pass the House. That'll happen on Saturday. Then it will go to the Senate, which will get a pretty quick vote next week. Then Mr. Biden is expected to sign it. And at that point, TikTok would face the forced sale from the Chinese to an American owner in about 9 to 12 months. A TikTok spokesman yesterday was shocked, outraged by this move in the House. The company, along with the Chinese diplomats, have been working Capitol Hill over the past week or two to prevent this from happening, but obviously they failed. Well, I'll keep you posted. And with that, let's take one more break of the morning, shifting here shortly to international news. But before we do, I want to tell you about the wonderful folks at Jace Medical and American Heart for Gold. They have supported this final block of news. And depending on your podcast, you may also hear about some wonderful folks that I use for all my tech needs at Chronovi.com. Great folks. At any rate, we'll be right back. Over the past few weeks, you all know that I got the stinking cold, then I got a sinus infection. But as I did, I was at peace because I knew I had antibiotics at the ready from JaceMedical.com. All I had to do was have a quick phone call with my doctor. I got the green light to use them. And that was it. There was no pulling myself out of bed, driving to the pharmacy, hoping it was ready. I was ready at home. And that's why I love Jace Medical. They provide you all kinds of prescription medications delivered right to your door. And it's so easy. Just go to jacemedical.com, fill out a very simple online form, and in no time flat, you will get your medications. In some cases, you'll have a quick phone call with one of their board-certified physicians to make sure you are getting exactly what you need. But regardless, it is a great service. So go to jasemedical.com. That's J-A-S-E medical.com. And you will enter a promo code. Of course, it is right at checkout. And you are going to get a great discount when you do. Again, folks, that's promo code right at J-A-S-E medical.com. And do this today, because there is no telling what tomorrow might bring. In the coming weeks, you are likely to hear even more headlines about leaders in both the U.S. and Europe starting to seize Russian assets. They're going to do it to pay for the war in Ukraine. We spoke of this back in early January with the very clear effects on the U.S. dollar and our pocketbooks. So if you are looking for ways to diversify your investments, and we should, consider physical gold and silver, and consider American Hartford Gold as you do. They are the precious metal dealer that I use and trust. When you give them a call, they will explain how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by purchasing physical gold and silver. And feel comfortable using American Hartford Gold, as they have an A-plus ranking from the Better Business Bureau. So either give them a call at 866-353-2694. Again, that is 866-353-2694. Or just text them. Just text WRIGHT, that's W-R-I-G-H-T, WRIGHT to 65532. Man, that is easy. Again, that's W-R-I-G-H-T to 65532. And when you do, folks, they will give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first order, all depending on your total purchase. So again, give them a call at 866-353-2694 or text my last name, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532. And folks, buy that physical gold and silver with American Hartford Gold. Welcome back to The Right Report and today's headline brief. We wrap up today with a pivot to international news. We begin in Mexico, where the government there is facing a surprising challenge. They need migrants to work in their fields. Here's why. The Washington Post reports that about 75% of the people who currently work in Mexican fields of fruits and vegetables, they are over the age of 45. Younger Mexicans are largely disinterested in farm labor, and those that are prefer to go to the U.S. Pay is substantially higher there. Well, Mexican farmers are now calling for some sort of fix. Well, what they're asking for is cheap foreign labor. Namely, they're looking for these otherwise illegal migrants that are coming from Central America or Africa transiting Mexico. And for what it's worth, the Mexican government is considering their request. They're working on creating a database of needed farm jobs that they can then offer up to these traveling migrants as they pass through. It's a fascinating development, I think, one to keep on our radars in the coming months as we probably get even more illegal aliens. I'll keep you posted. Next, we stop in the Middle East this morning for a couple of updates, but just to emphasize, as I did at the start of the episode, I am still watching for those strikes in Syria, Iraq, and especially Iran. We've got early reports that the Israelis have hit cities in Iran, mostly associated with their nuclear weapons program. That's a big deal. More to come on Monday. So that breaking news aside for a moment, let's talk about something good, shall we, in the Middle East? And we've actually got a little bit of good news out of the Gaza Strip, where more aid is getting to civilians this morning. The White House and Israeli officials note that about 3,000 aid trucks have moved into Gaza over the past 12 days, give or take. Most of the trucks are coming from the south, only a few in the north. But overall, goods are reappearing in markets and stores, certainly in central and southern parts of Gaza, and at lower prices. So, for example, a 50-pound sack of flour now costs about $18. That had been at over $500 just a couple weeks ago. Meanwhile, 2 pounds of tomatoes, that runs you about $4 right now in the Gaza Strip, but that had been $40 just back in March. Nevertheless, malnutrition will remain in Gaza for some time, and that's because Hamas continues to hold those Israeli hostages this morning, and they are refusing to consider any ceasefire agreements. In fact, they just rejected another one yesterday following a previous rejection from over the last weekend. And so, sadly, Palestinian civilians will continue to starve and die, all because Hamas chooses that fate for them. It's incredibly sad. Next. We return to the United Arab Emirates and the city of Dubai this morning to talk about geoengineering and that experiment that went very wrong. So, quick refresh. As listeners might recall from earlier this week, The United Arab Emirates, or UAE, they have spent years seeding clouds with natural salts to encourage rain in their very otherwise dry desert landscapes. On Sunday and Monday, storm clouds were brewing, and as the government now acknowledges, they sent at least 7 flights into the clouds to seed and thus encourage more rain. And it worked. Too well. As listeners know, the country was flooded. Upwards of 18 people died in the nearby country of Oman. Well, this morning, Dubai continues to dry out as best as they can, but still, flights remain canceled. The airport is still trying to work through all the mess. Homes and shopping malls are still underwater in many places. A lot of roads are impassable. Curiously, global media has emphasized that these floods are to be expected, not because of the geoengineering, but because of climate change. For example, the French wire service called AFP spoke to climate experts in London who said this, quote, "There's no news here. We can expect an increase in the variability of rain with climate change in the Middle East, which of course means more extreme events," end quote. But oddly, in this article with the AFP and a whole bunch of others, none of them made reference to the fact that the UAE government sent these 7 planes on Friday and, Sunday and Monday to seed the clouds. In fact, a lot of these media outlets are saying it never happened, despite the fact that the government has confirmed it. Well, as for why that might be, let me pivot from facts and data to my quick analysis and opinion. Well, never let a crisis go to waste. That was famously said by President Barack Obama's chief of staff years ago, although he was not the first guy to say it. And I think that's what's happening right now. Every weather event across this globe, every crisis, is a chance to prove that climate change is real and it is bad and it's got to be stopped. Never mind the fact that climate change doesn't have anything to do with it. So that's what's going on. And it would be transparent and maybe even a little bit funny if it weren't so serious. And indeed it is, if we need any reminders about that. There are 18 souls in Oman who are no longer with us this morning. So that's why this stuff matters. And that's why we have to talk about it, even if the global media would prefer that we not. And with that, we are leaving the Middle East this morning, and we are heading to Europe to talk about 2 pieces of news. The first is related to electric vehicles. And in short, nobody wants them. Passenger vehicle sales in Europe dropped 2.8% last month, but that hides the fact that the sales of EVs dropped even further, down 11%. Things were especially bad in Italy, where EV sales dropped 34%. In Germany, they dropped 29%. The sales of hybrids, however, were up about 1% continent-wide. In short, if I could give you my quick analysis, when you let the market decide rather than the government, it's going to tell you what people want. And what they want right now is a little less dirty green EVs and a little bit more of the traditional stuff, even in those leftist countries all throughout Europe. Next, we unfortunately have some sobering news out of Ukraine. The Wall Street Journal is reporting this morning that officials in Kiev believe that Russia is adding about 30,000 new troops to the fight each month. And that is a major problem for President Volodymyr Zelensky. Even with his new law that conscripts more young men, his country, will likely add only 50,000 soldiers in total as compared to Russia's 30,000 a month. Now, I should tell you that the exact number of new Ukrainian recruits is classified, according to Time Magazine and others. So it could be a little bit more or a little bit less than 50,000, but it won't be dramatically different. And that is ultimately because, as the New York Times and others report, Ukraine faces a demographics crisis. There are simply too few men under the age of 30. However, that is clearly not a problem faced by the Russians this morning. And that is why they're planning to send these 30,000 a month, plus surge an additional 300,000 troops by June. That estimate, by the way, was provided by President Zelensky about 2 weeks ago. Folks, no analysis or opinion on this. It's just a painful reminder of why Ukraine's generals say in both public and private that more war material is not going to matter unless they get more bodies to the front lines. And I will let you guess where they are hoping to get those young men. More to come. Next, we leave Europe this morning and head to Africa, stopping first in Niger. Now, we've long discussed this country because of the U.S. government's $100 million drone base in the city of Agadez. But as I've shared with you, U.S. forces are being pushed out of that country while Russian forces are being moved in. The military leaders of Niger simply prefer Moscow over D.C. And that is what takes us back to Niger this morning. A U.S. Air Force whistleblower at Agadez says that the U.S. military and State Department are defying Niger's demands that they leave, and that is endangering the lives of the U.S. troops that remain. Now, the embassy officials responsible for this endangerment include the ambassador, Ms. Kathleen Fitzgibbon, and an Air Force colonel named Ms. Nora Nelson Richter. And for the record, both of them deny the allegations, and so too do the Pentagon and the U.S. State Department. But Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida says that he's been working with his Air Force whistleblower for a while, and he doesn't believe either the Biden administration or the embassy officials in Niger. Rather, the whistleblower is the one who has credibility here, and that is because he says that American troops in Niger are effectively being held hostage. They are not being allowed to leave the base, nor are food or medicines getting to our service members with any regularity. So let's keep this on our radars, ladies and gentlemen. Very dangerous, very important, with more to come. Next, we head south to the country of Zambia this morning for an update about copper and drought. Zambian authorities told mining companies yesterday that their operations would be further restricted because of a lack of hydropower. Now, as listeners might remember, there is a serious drought in that region, and it is affecting hydropower operations and the supply of electricity. It's hammering the countries of Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, and Malawi. And that ultimately is increasing the prices of electricity, the prices of food, and the price of copper. And that's because Zambia is especially one of the world's largest suppliers of that metal. So I'm going to keep you posted on this because elevated copper prices will eventually trickle down to consumers like you. But also, we should care because of this. You may remember that U.S. taxpayers are funding a railroad project that goes from Angola to the copper belt of Zambia. It's going to come at a cost of about $250 million. But clearly, that money is not going to be well spent if we can't get copper out of the ground, which was the whole point of fixing up that old railroad line. Well, nevertheless, more to come. For our final piece of Africa news this morning, we stop in Western Africa for an update about chocolate. Over the past week, the Ivory Coast has seen record heat, while Nigeria has seen intense flooding. Those developments, plus some viral and bacterial outbreaks amongst the cocoa trees, means even less production of cocoa this coming harvest and into the fall. And that's going to put upward pressure on the already record-high prices for cocoa and, of course, your chocolate bars to come. So I'm going to keep you posted on this because it is certainly bad news for consumers, fair. Also, the farmers, that's sad. But maybe regional stability as well. And that's because Islamic radicals may offer these very poor, struggling farmers some big cash to engage in terrorism. More to come on that. Finally, this morning, we end on a playful note out of China. As listeners might recall from my previous briefs, officials in Beijing are trying to encourage more of their people to have babies. There is a demographics issue in the country. The people of China are growing older, they don't have a lot of immigration, and too few families are being created. And that's why communist officials were pretty frustrated over the past week or so by Chinese citizens who were complaining about married life on social media. Wives were gossiping about their husbands, husbands were complaining about their wives, and parents were expressing their frustrations about having kids. And then worst of all, according to the officials in Beijing, the women and the wives were complaining about their overbearing mothers-in-law. Now, the Communist Party said that these social media videos were causing extreme emotions and amplifying and exaggerating conflict, especially, they said, between the mothers-in-law and the daughters-in-law. So, they shut down the videos and they warned people, do not post anything more about this matter anywhere. So, there you have it. If anybody asks, everything and everyone is happy in China. And yes, all mothers-in-law are wonderful. No more questions required. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we conclude this morning's episode of The Right Report. As always, I will see you on Monday, God willing. Until then, I leave you with the creed of every good spy and every wise American. They're the words from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Good day.